Hello and namaste. I'm Peter Furco, and this is Peter's Podcast, where we talk about real yoga, actual happiness, and deep living. Thanks for joining me. In today's episode, number 3, Jenny Bloom joins me, and we're going to talk about what it really means to have a yoga practice. And then we get off on a nice discussion about a concept in yoga that's often referred to as the four keys, four ways to deal with different kinds of people in life in order to keep a kind of equilibrium that lets you live life to the fullest, but without getting bounced about by your reactions to those other people. I hope you enjoy it. Welcome, Jenny.
Thank you, Peter. It's so good to be here.
Yeah, on a beautiful summer day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I feel like most people I talked to today were kind of either frazzled or fritzed out or somehow feeling the effects of changing seasons, which is often like not being very grounded, being hard to focus. Maybe we're up all night because it was the solstice and the sun is so powerful.
That would be me. I woke up at 4 in the morning.
Yeah.
Up.
Yeah, and I think that's pretty natural. But just since we talk about yoga here, we're not doing yoga necessarily, but why don't we do yoga for just a second?
Mm-hmm.
Just because even if you're just listening to this while you're driving or you're sitting on a train or a subway or something, you could still do this thing. So just come to whatever comfortable thing would make sense. If you're driving, don't let go of the wheel. And take a full breath in, just breathing in through your nose, and breathe out through your nose. And just watch your breath over the next few breaths, going in and out. And what we're doing when we watch our breath is using the breath as a point of focus. When you have a point of focus, your mind doesn't wander, it instead stays on one point. And this automatically shifts your mind into a different state from that distracted state that we find ourselves in so often. Great. Now we need to tell a joke or something.
Yeah, so
I was totally going
to the very, very comfortable place where I was starting to feel inside my body and like really become a student of what was happening there. And I remembered we're part of this conversation. We're having this dialogue. So back.
Here we are. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the more that you practice yoga, the easier it is to go to that place. Your mind is accustomed to making that transition. So it's something you do in a blink.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for instance, you were talking a little bit ago about being at meditation class today, at Alan Finger's meditation class. And you should all go there at Teishta Yoga.
Mm-hmm.
And saying that you did a preliminary practice and you were out, and then you did the practice that we were supposed to do, which was more of a guided thing. And that's really common. You know, when you do practice, at first it seems so hard. How can you stop thinking so much or whatever it is that's the challenge? I feel uncomfortable sitting here. And then over time, it just gets to this place where you just go there. And it is kind of funny to then go to a meditation class or a guided thing because you're already there. And now you have to come back and listen to the guided part. So
But what I think is so interesting, like, I mean, I've been fortunate. I've been able to sit in Alan's class for, I think, like six years now, which is nothing compared to you because you're like 35.
Not all in Alan's class.
Not all Alan's class.
But about twice that in Alan's class.
And it's really interesting because you would think that you would get it. You would think that you would like you would suddenly be like a fantastic meditator, and that, you know, like, I think that we all have these ideas, or like it's very common to have these like thoughts that somehow if you practice yoga all the time, something huge is going to happen. And I actually think it's true. Something huge happens, but it doesn't come in the way that I would have expected it to,
right.
You know?
And it doesn't necessarily come if you're not doing the right practice, which is where it becomes so important to do the study part of yoga, right? Where you're studying the right stuff with the right people and studying yourself and seeing how does this work so that you can go back to your teachers and say, you know, this is what's going on with me.
Totally. Right?
And then the second part is like you say, you don't, it may not necessarily be the outcome you were thinking if what you were thinking was sort of some kind of technicolor extravaganza.
Like that guy Dylan who does these amazing like handstands on like the corners of cliffs all over the world. And, you know, I think that a lot of people have that idea that that's, if I practice yoga, then like I'm going to be doing these like acrobatics. And, you know, we touched on that before. And that's so not...
Before is when we were having coffee earlier.
Right.
Just so people don't rewind.
Not on this podcast. Right, right. But I think we did talk about it on the first podcast, right? A little bit about how like, you know, this like common perception of like, yoga practice is often very focused on the external, but what we're talking about is a lot of those more internal benefits. Right.
Where the external helps the internal, but it's not an end in itself or a pursuit.
Yes. Yeah. And what I think is interesting about what you're saying right now is that it's so individual, that the things that we practice can be so individual and that there really is something for everyone that is like your teaching.
Right. In fact, I mentioned Ishta a moment ago. So Ishta is the school that I studied in and now I teach in and that Alan Finger founded. And the word literally means individualized in Sanskrit. And it's usually used, well, it's used in the Yoga Sutras to say, if you do study, if you self-study and you do the hard work that purifies out what's in your way, and you, when you do that self-studying piece, you find your Ishta Devata. And this word Devata usually gets translated as God or goddess, right? Like a deity.
Right.
But the word's root, Deva, relates to light. It means light, right? So the divine beings are divine, meaning they are like the light. And as you were talking about in meditation today, you know, when you get quiet, the first thing that happens is you start to see light, like there's somebody shining a light in the middle of your forehead. So
optical the radiance.
Ishta Devata is this, what does it take for me to get to that place where I see the light? So, you know, that's where it's so helpful to have a teacher who goes like back to the roots of what this stuff is about, because then it's not in the dogma zone where, oh no, you will find your God is Ganesha or your whatever. I mean, that's all well and good, but what Ganesha means is a kind of energy, right? A light that helps you find your way.
Almost like an archetypal sort of thing.
Like, what is the tweak that I need for my personality and my circumstances in my current situation that's going to push me to be able to break through my obstacles and get to that place?
Right. And in my life, in my daily life, not just like on the mat, not just like with my body.
Because it'll ripple through. We're all one person. We're all one entity.
Totally. And I think that's really interesting, Peter, because I think one of the things that people often get kind of, it takes years and years and years to start to discover that your yoga practice actually can shift things in your life.
Yeah.
And not just because you go to class every day, but because you start to have new ways of thinking, new tools that you can put in.
And it makes it makes a shift in you. And I think that's why so many people go to maybe a yoga class because they heard it's hip or something, you know, they for whatever reason they
like
went there.
Hip-hop yoga, like the yoga that they do to like really loud hip-hop music.
I mean, but I don't know if it happens so much there. Maybe it does too. But if I think if there's a if there's an element of authentic practice going on, people who go get a feeling of something, like if it's done not just as exercise,
right?
Like if the teacher has at least a sense of what it's about or studied, even if like some environments don't foster teachers talking about much mm-hmm. beyond just like physical alignment or something like yeah. that in an asana class. Mm-hmm. But I think if the teacher is a yogi and mm-hmm. sort of has embodied that other stuff, mm-hmm. it radiates through because it's an energy, mm-hmm. you know? And so mm-hmm. the teacher becomes like that light, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. right? And so the student gets some sense of what's going on. They're encouraged to maybe focus in or do the concentration, mm-hmm. like what mm-hmm. we did with the breath a moment mm-hmm. ago. Mm-hmm. And that makes a shift in the student. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, wow, I really like this yoga stuff. I don't know exactly why, but mm-hmm. I want to go back, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. I know someone who's doing that right now, like for a long time has been wanting to do it and finally found a teacher, really loves her teacher, mm-hmm. and is, like, the other day we were talking and she said, I'm just so into yoga now. It's like what I do all the time. Mm-hmm. And
she doesn't mean class. She does,
it's like the whole thing, you know, right, she's doing a right. couple different things that are all related and mm-hmm. it includes breathing and meditation mm-hmm. and, you know, a gong bath.
Ooh, yes. Yeah. So that brings up this interesting thought, which is, or question really, like what is a yogi? Like what does that even mean?
Well, it means someone who practices yoga mm-hmm. and, you know, that means doing those two things I mentioned. Mm-hmm. Doing a study, mm-hmm. right? So you're learning from someone mm-hmm. who knows yoga, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. which is really like someone who's pointing. Mm-hmm. It's a source of light. Like yeah. when the lights are off, it's
yeah.
dark.
Yeah.
When someone turns on the lights, yeah. you can see what's going yeah. on, right?
Totally,
so
totally.
The word for teacher in Sanskrit mm-hmm. literally means remover of darkness.
Yeah.
You know? So you study mm-hmm. and then you have to study yourself. It's like mm-hmm. a cyclical kind of thing, mm-hmm. you know, hey, there's a cat. And so you're taking that mm-hmm. teaching, mm-hmm. you're seeing what it does to you. Mm-hmm. You're getting the teaching adjusted by your mm-hmm. teacher, by additional learning. And on the way you purify who you are. Like mm-hmm. I'm going to grab the cat. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. cat. So you purify, mm-hmm. which means always to clear away what is the muckiness in the way of the light coming through, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So say you've got...
like dirty windows.
Yeah, like dirty windows, but like in a more explicit way. Like say
like cobwebs.
You're really lazy, mm-hmm. right? Like you have a mm-hmm. laziness about
I'm,
you.
I'm not saying you
yeah. are, no. Say one were lazy.
Yes, you know, if one were
like
lazy.
That mm-hmm. could be an mm-hmm. obstacle to getting, being a yeah. yogi because mm-hmm. you would have to be willing to do your practice.
Right.
So if you're not mm-hmm. practicing, mm-hmm. you're not a yogi. You might
right.
be a dabbler.
Right.
Right.
Right. Right.
And
right.
so you might totally. Get some little inklings of things. You might like it when yeah. I go. When yeah. I like it so much when I go, but I haven't been for a year. You know?
Totally.
So
totally. And so there's something about being a yogi that indicates a dedication.
Yeah.
To something that...
Yeah.
Like a repeating of...
Because of what mm-hmm. we were just saying about, yes. like, your experience with meditation. When
yes.
you've been doing it for a
yes.
long time
oh,
with
totally.
This dedication,
yeah.
it mm-hmm. becomes possible. It becomes easier.
Totally.
And that's when you have the experiences that are why you're doing it in the first
totally.
Place.
Totally. And what I was mentioning to you earlier is also the practice and the repetition of the practice has allowed me to have a depth in these places that I navigate through, these transition points, so that I'm able to do a practice that leads me into this experience of focused concentration.
Right.
And then I'm able to allow that to be effortless.
Right.
And then I'm able to go back into a new practice, a new Kriya technique that's mm-hmm. focused in a different way.
Right.
And allow that to have its effect.
Right.
And what's so interesting, and I kind of want to touch on this talk that I heard you do, which I thought was really interesting. What I think is really interesting is it's not just the meditation practices that we're practicing, but it's also these sort of like constructs, these ideas. And there's this idea that I'm always telling people about that's in the sutras. It's called the four keys. Mm-hmm. And you did a talk on it, and I want to touch on it because I think there's something really valuable about it that I don't think we learn as people. And maybe you could just like like mention like quickly, like, cause I always forget there are four keys and I always forget one out of the three.
Yeah.
So
what are they?
So what are they?
Well, first of all, what they are as a whole is a way that you can deal with the people that you encounter in life. Mm-hmm. Because to go back to this thing of the purifying, right?
Yeah.
And the studying, you, as long as you're in a state that's not comfortable, right? When you're not comfortable, you're not feeling good, then it's very hard to do a yoga practice. Like, I'm not talking about like doing downward facing dog. I'm talking about getting to a state of mind that really transforms you, right? Doing a meditation practice, getting quiet. Because when you have something bothering you, it pulls your focus, right? You can't just focus. Maybe I should finish those steps of the practice, because there was the studying, there's the purifying, the clearing away, and those two things set you up for the third part of what it means to be a yogi, which is to surrender. And you can only surrender when you've done the first two parts, and when you're in this state where you're okay to surrender, you're safe, you're quiet, you're still, then you let go. And then your mind goes through the transitions you mentioned earlier, just a moment ago, not when we had coffee, right? Where your mind can go and have this experience of who I am, that's not all my thinking about stuff, right? And that's ultimately what we're trying to get to. So the four keys are, how do you deal with people? Because people are challenging, you know? Like, I don't know about you, but I'm the best person. And all those other people are just annoying.
I think you're totally right. Yeah. I agree. You are the best person. But yeah, no, totally. I mean,
other people are annoying.
We're
great.
Right? Totally. Okay. Small circle.
And we like Wendy, too.
Yeah, we like Wendy.
So in dealing with all those other people, these four keys come in. And so they were written about in the Yoga Sutras. So they're about yoga. They're about how do you deal with people so that you can have yoga. Given that yoga is this coming to a state of mind where you touch this part of who you are, you have this transition into this mental state of part of who I am, that once you've gone there, you're feeling different when you come back, right? Which is not to say you're a different person, but you have this more,
it's like having slept,
spaciousness. Yes, exactly. It's like having slept, except you're not sleeping, you're awake, and having the same
restorative
effect of sleep, plus like you didn't sleep through it, you were like there, there's literally like a shift in your brain that scientists are starting to study, and certainly a shift in your mood and a shift in your resourcefulness. I mean, I can't tell you how many times people have said to me, you know, I'm so different at work, I don't blow up at people, you know, people are saying, you know, you seem really different, all this kind of stuff. So this is what comes from practicing. So the four keys are that when you run into people of four different types, how should you try to cultivate a reaction to them? How should you try to take what's going on with them? So the first one is that when you run into someone who's happy, right? So we live in a pretty cynical time, so I would guess anybody knows that when you see someone happy, you go, what the fuck do they have to be happy about, right?
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
So, you know, but instead what the sutra suggests that you cultivate is love for that.
Yeah.
Right. And when you do that, you're literally teaching yourself how to recognize this magical thing that we all have the possibility of touching in life. This, in Sanskrit, it's called ananda. It means bliss. And you know, that's kind of a abstract word, and it gives like the impression of like, you know, doing drugs,
tons
or something.
Of ecstasy. Yeah,
but really it's like when you see something that you might describe as wonderful, like you
like a tiny puppy
in wonder about it, like when you first see something amazing for the first time, the Grand Canyon, or you see a gorgeous flower, or you go to the went to the ocean today.
Yes,
when you see the ocean and you haven't been there that that year, or maybe you go every day, but it's still like this moment of wonder and majesty and like something super special, whatever. That is tapping into this quality of blissfulness in the realm of what we experience in the sensory world, right? But it's our capacity to have that feeling of wonder, that's innate. We have that, right? It's not the thing that's wonderful. It's that we are opening ourselves up to that. We could do that more often. When we see someone happy, it could be an opportunity to share in that ananda that person is experiencing. So the more we cultivate that reaction, and not one that's cynical or sarcastic or jealous, etc., the more we'll be in a state where,
like, in alignment,
and the more we'll be in a state where we can do this yoga practice and not go, damn it, why was she so happy? Okay, the second key is for somebody who's unhappy. And
ignore them, right? Isn't that what you're supposed to do?
No. That's a common reaction. Another common reaction is they deserve it, right? They didn't make the right choices. We hear a lot of that in the political realm these days. And
or just like change it, something about it.
And we're, and I want to reiterate, this is about yoga. These four keys are about how to do yoga. They're not about how should I be in the world if I want to effect social justice. However, there could be arguments made that these will also do that, right?
Totally.
But it gets a little clear. There's no gray area when we're talking about yoga, because it's about how can you get to a state of mind that lets you not be distracted or pulled
or fragmented or
pulled away by some thoughts about somebody.
Right.
So with the person who is unhappy, the key is to treat them with compassion. So you see someone who's unhappy, you're compassionate to that. And maybe that means you do something. Or maybe it just means that you allow yourself to feel what they're feeling.
How you're feeling in relation.
In relation to it. But what that does is it opens up our understanding that we are like the other person. Right? So instead of having this feeling of being separate from everyone else, we, in the moment of compassion, feel what they feel. So we're able to then not feel separate, not feel distinct, and not feel like there's an other who's
or that there's like a problem
or whatever, a problem. So we come to, again, a state that's more in an alignment with ease, right? With a contentment. We talked about contentment a lot last time around. So that's the second key, right? First one,
happy
love
for
someone who's happy. Second one, compassion for someone who is unhappy. Right? The third one is that when you see someone who has had an honorable success, they've had a success not by trickery or that they don't deserve, but, you know, they've a just success, like they worked hard and they got something. So when you encounter someone who has that, you are happy for them. That's the reaction to cultivate. So you allow their success to tap your own sense of wonder. Wow, look at that. Bravo, way to go. Right?
Yeah, you clap at the end of an amazing performance. Like, but doing that with people in your life who also...
It's harder. You have to cultivate that. It's very easy to be jealous, to be envious.
Especially if they have something that you want.
That you're trying to get to.
Right? But there's this perception of scarcity that we're perpetuating when we say, like, oh, she got that and I wanted that.
Right.
You know, as opposed to aligning with like how that's a wonderful thing and aligning with that possibility. Like, it's not actually separate.
Yeah. And it helps to bring you to that mm-hmm. place where you start mm-hmm. to recognize that mm-hmm. everyone has mm-hmm. his or her own, what yogis would call karma, mm-hmm. their own set of things they are mm-hmm. working on and they're doing mm-hmm. in life. Mm-hmm. We are, each have our own place, mm-hmm. like our own set of circumstances, mm-hmm. and we're each doing mm-hmm. the things we're doing. Right? Totally. Someone else has a success at that. Mm-hmm. We're going to go have a success at whatever is our thing.
After you tell me the last one, I think it'd be really cool to talk a little bit about this idea of like good karma versus bad karma
yeah, sure.
that I feel like is like everywhere in our society.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the fourth key is about when you encounter a person who is doing stuff that's more hurtful, mm-hmm. right? Someone mm-hmm. who's doing something that is, you would consider like maybe dangerous or bad, or mm-hmm. a lot of times the sutra gets translated as wicked, someone mm-hmm. who's wicked, mm-hmm. you know, not in a good way. And
not in the California way.
Yeah. Like a wave or mm-hmm. something. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the thing to cultivate for that person, mm-hmm. according to the four keys, is a detachment from that, that mm-hmm. you don't get embroiled in their thing. Mm-hmm. Right.
And one of the things that you said in your talk that I really liked was that you cultivate the sense of detachment because you recognize that they are, how did you put it? That they are confused.
Yeah, they're in a state of confusion, and that's mm-hmm. why they're acting mm-hmm. the way that they are.
Yeah.
They're confused about something, probably one mm-hmm. of the other three keys,
yeah.
right? The
yeah.
other three kinds of people. Mm-hmm. They're feeling a lack, or they're feeling hurt, mm-hmm. or, you know, they're, for some reason,
misidentified.
They're confusing the cause and effect of things, mm-hmm. and they're taking it out, basically, mm-hmm. on the world.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Instead of finding it within.
Right.
Right. They're sensing there's something about outside mm-hmm. that I need or that I'm going to get, and
yeah,
that's
like
going to make me happy.
Totally. Totally. Right.
And even though that's not going to make them happy, and mm-hmm. see, once you detach yourself from what they're going through, mm-hmm. then your other keys can come into use. Like, you could be compassionate about what they're going through.
Yeah.
That might be a more fruitful response.
Mm-hmm. But from a place of detachment.
From a place of detachment where you yeah. didn't get sucked into their yeah. thing, and now you're mm-hmm. all wrapped up around it.
Yeah.
And again, this is something that's really going on a lot in our political realm mm-hmm. right now, that people mm-hmm. who are upset mm-hmm. are really getting thrown off their equilibrium mm-hmm. because they're sensing things going on that seem wicked, mm-hmm. right? That seem bad. Right.
Right.
And again, right. a lot of that is coming from a sense of lack, or I'm not going to get enough if somebody else gets it. And
well, what I mean, like, can I, like, for example, like everything that's happening with the Environmental Protection Agency, mm-hmm. like the defunding and all of that, like how can someone see that kind of thing and care about the environment and like not get all upset with an administration that doesn't value,
right,
you know, the Environmental Protection Agency.
So here's where there's yoga practice mm-hmm. and then there's what you do then in mm-hmm. your living, mm-hmm. right? So
right.
in your yoga practice, if mm-hmm. all you're thinking about is mm-hmm. that they're dismantling the EPA mm-hmm. or its teeth, right? Mm-hmm. Then it's going to be very hard to do your yoga practice.
Right.
It's going to be very hard to get quiet and be still mm-hmm. and be in that place where you're letting go.
Yeah.
Because your thoughts will come back and grab you and yeah. pull you out of your still place.
Yeah.
Right? Thoughts are like that. Just give them a little something to mm-hmm. hook onto, and mm-hmm. then you're like down this stream of consciousness.
Yeah.
Right? So there's not detaching from it, mm-hmm. doing your practice. Mm-hmm. And when you do your practice, you might get some brilliant idea about how to tackle a problem, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. Or you might come out of your practice where you were just quiet, mm-hmm. and then later in the day, you might have some brilliant idea, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. So once you get out in the world, it's not that you will do nothing mm-hmm. when you see something wrong out in the world. Mm-hmm. You'll do something, mm-hmm. but your something will be from this place of equilibrium that you've established mm-hmm. and this place of resourcefulness that you gain from your practicing, mm-hmm. right? More poise, more space, more balance, which mm-hmm. lets you think more clearly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you won't be operating, I think, from that place that there is even something wrong, because that's also a perspective of limitation.
Yeah.
It isn't necessarily true of the whole picture.
Yeah. And, you know, that will, mm-hmm. The hairs on the back of activists' necks mm-hmm. just went crazy yeah. when you yeah. said that, right? Mm-hmm. But it is true. Mm-hmm. Our role, mm-hmm. you know, say I'm an activist. Mm-hmm. My role is to be an activist and to go out and mm-hmm. fight the good fight. Mm-hmm. But you're right also that, you know, the nature of the world isn't always that everything's going to work out the way you want.
Or the way you're envisioning.
In the time frame you envision it yeah. to happen.
Yeah.
So you have to do the work mm-hmm. and be okay with the results. Mm-hmm. Right? There's right. a yoga concept about that, right? You're doing what you're doing, mm-hmm. but you're remaining detached from the outcome, mm-hmm. right? Knowing yeah. that you're just doing the work. That's yeah. the only thing you can do.
Yeah.
The world is doing totally. The action. And this brings us back to mm-hmm. this notion of karma, good mm-hmm. karma, bad karma.
And if we also look at the history of the world, oftentimes before like a giant shift happens, there is this like massive resistance to it. Like there is like a revolution, and it mm-hmm. comes out of something extreme that like the rulers are doing. And so like it's often hard for us to, I think, see that perspective when we're so embroiled and enmeshed in like the details.
Yeah.
But it is one of the benefits of having a practice that you're able to actually start to make connections with different periods of time, with different like understandings.
Right.
Like with even like the polarity of it, right?
Yeah.
Like the way that like sometimes like something, so this kind of gets us into good karma, bad karma. Like yeah. what, like are these things really, like is this like, do we have bad karma right now as like America? Like does America have bad karma or yeah. is it good karma? Like
well,
how do we know?
First of all, the word karma, it yeah. means action.
Okay.
It's the action that the universe is going through. Mm-hmm. If you want to like do comparisons, like comparative literature, mm-hmm. right? So between what physicists talk about and what yogis talk about, it's like from the Big Bang. Mm-hmm. The Big Bang was this gigantic explosion, this big mm-hmm. Event mm-hmm. of action, mm-hmm. right? Where things went from nothing mm-hmm. to this hurtling action mm-hmm. that created everything mm-hmm. that we experience mm-hmm. and that we're still trying to figure out, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So when yogis talk about what that all brought mm-hmm. about, it's this notion that a consciousness, a reason, a idea just exploded this beingness mm-hmm. into being, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
My own pet theory around that is mm-hmm. for the sheer experience of it, the way that mm-hmm. we might go to a movie, mm-hmm. right? Because we want to have this experience. Or mm-hmm. you might make something, mm-hmm. like you create something like mm-hmm. a piece of art or whatever. Mm-hmm. You're just making a thing to mm-hmm. do it, right?
Totally.
So,
or take a trip to Tokyo.
Yeah, the universe is taking a trip to mm-hmm. universe
yeah.
right now. Right?
Yeah.
The consciousness, whatever that part mm-hmm. that we all seem to be mm-hmm. tapped into in mm-hmm. some way.
Mm-hmm. Right. So one of the interesting, like, it's like, if you are the universe, then how do you know yourself? Like, what does it mean? Like, what is the process that universe has? Like, you know, like it's an interesting idea. It's like a bubble within a bubble to think about, like, if you are everything, then like what matters to you? You know, like what do you get for the woman who has it all? Diamonds.
Boy, did that marketing work. Yeah. Yes.
But getting back to this question of good karma and bad karma.
Yeah, so the karma, right? The action yeah. is just going, right?
Yeah,
everything
yeah.
is just going. Mm-hmm. The mm-hmm. art piece, the story, mm-hmm. the mm-hmm. movie, the trip, it's mm-hmm. all just unfolding.
Right.
And the way that we evolve mm-hmm. biologically, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. if you want to call it that, we have this sense of ourselves as separate from each other. Mm-hmm. You know, in other times, so maybe it's not so much biologically, it's partly biological and partly cultural, mm-hmm. because other cultures mm-hmm. along the way had much more of a sense of a we, mm-hmm. right? We are doing something, mm-hmm. right?
Our resources.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The people, mm-hmm. right? So we are as a part of everything that is, and we are literally a mm-hmm. part of everything that is. Yeah. You know, there was just one Big Bang,
right?
And all of the elements mm-hmm. in the universe mm-hmm. emerged out of that, mm-hmm. and all became all these things that we see when we mm-hmm. look out with our eyes, and mm-hmm. when we look even deeper with our telescopes, and we look with mm-hmm. radio telescopes that can see things that yeah. visually aren't available,
or even oxygen.
So
right?
All like of we these breathe things,
oxygen, and then trees. How does it work? We breathe oxygen, and trees give us oxygen.
We breathe out carbon dioxide,
and then the trees take the carbon dioxide and give us oxygen.
Right,
and that's something that we never see. Or
so
even
that's
don't
karma
even think about.
In a way, right? Yeah. Everything is just yeah. acting. It's yeah. all doing its mm-hmm. piece. It's mm-hmm. all doing its role, mm-hmm. and we're doing our mm-hmm. piece of this whole mm-hmm. giant universe mm-hmm. thing. Mm-hmm. But because we have this capacity to think about it, we suddenly get
up.
A story around mm-hmm. that.
We think we're doing it.
We're doing it.
Mm-hmm. Right? I made the tree do that.
I love this photograph that sometimes mm-hmm. circles on Facebook mm-hmm. of like, this is you, mm-hmm. this little dot mm-hmm. in the middle of this solar system, uh-huh. in the middle of the Milky Way, uh-huh. in the middle of the billions of galaxies,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And yet our problems seem so uh-huh. critical
yeah.
to
yeah.
everything, right?
Like, I need to get to Mars.
So whatever we're experiencing that's mm-hmm. making us mm-hmm. feel mm-hmm. good, bad, or otherwise, you
yeah.
know, I mean,
yeah.
these are real things to us. They seem yeah. very real, and in many ways, they are real. They mm-hmm. are our experience.
There are dramas.
But when you allow yourself to expand your sense of who you are, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. then those problems take on more accurate place in the your own world, right? You get mm-hmm. a clearer picture of what's going on. Mm-hmm. And then you can say things like, you know, it's okay that, you know, Mary Jo got the part in the play and mm-hmm. I didn't, mm-hmm. you know?
Right.
That's when that becomes possible, when you get bigger mm-hmm. in your perspective, mm-hmm. right? Then
yeah.
you're ready to go do whatever your thing is. Then you're in a better place to do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But before you can get big enough, mm-hmm. then it's just all about me.
Right. And you don't even
know
that
we say that like it's a joke,
play.
But it's so
totally
true that
totally.
It's all about me.
Totally. Right? And I think it's there's a great expression. You can't see the forest from the trees.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I think it's in Hebrew. It's like when you're in the forest, you don't know you're in a forest. Yet you're in a forest.
Right.
Like those are facts, you know?
Yeah.
Like when Mary Jo gets the part and you don't get it, like there's this like often this perception like this is the only play that will ever exist. Like,
yeah.
you know, because emotionally it might feel like that, and like our identity is so caught in our emotions and how
right.
we feel in relationship to other
right.
people and how we define ourselves. But one of the things that can be so limiting about when we really believe these stories is that we forget that we're always evolving, that we're always changing, that how our karma like manifests, like what happens in our lives is always influenced by so many things that are outside of us, that it's not simply even how we think of ourselves.
Right. There's always this question mm-hmm. of like, do I have the freedom to mm-hmm. choose mm-hmm. things?
Yeah.
You know, and in many cultures that would have been considered like mm-hmm. blasphemy.
To
right?
even think that you had a choice.
Right? If God mm-hmm. wills it was
yeah.
like a statement,
totally.
Right?
Totally. Like total surrender.
Yeah.
And no act, no.
And yet mm-hmm. you're acting, mm-hmm. but from this other perspective that you're acting is part of a bigger plan,
mm-hmm.
right? And, you know, granted, there's a religious quality to that statement,
mm-hmm.
but you could substitute the word universe in there,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And like, if a planet sort of were to mm-hmm. fall out of its orbit, mm-hmm. right, for some reason, like maybe a star changes mm-hmm. size or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, that's like the kind of things that happen all the mm-hmm. time. We have mm-hmm. shifts in our life like that.
Yeah.
But when you look at some abstract object like that, mm-hmm. if it rolls one way or rolls another way, or mm-hmm. a stone falls down a hill or it mm-hmm. doesn't fall down a hill, we don't assign like emotional qualities to those things. They're things that are happening,
yeah,
right? Unless they're affecting us. Like if a stone falls on top of my apartment, mm-hmm. that would be
totally
dramatic.
But even if that happened, we tend to think that that's about us.
Yeah, it's bad karma.
Stone fell on my apartment, and what does this mean? And it probably was like, you know, we create story,
right? So I'm just trying to make this mm-hmm. distinction between if we see something that's not related mm-hmm. to us, we mm-hmm. just sort of notice that it's mm-hmm. going on, right? And you might even have wonder about it, right?
Right.
But when it becomes about us, mm-hmm. then we assign this good or bad notion.
Right.
It's something I want. It's something I don't want. Mm-hmm. And this leads us into another realm of like yoga learnings, mm-hmm. which is that when we think that our happiness mm-hmm. is based on stuff outside of us, that's always a recipe for like
extra misery,
unhappiness,
extra unhappiness.
Yeah, when we're looking outside, mm-hmm. and in Sanskrit, there it's called like the thing you like, the thing mm-hmm. that attracts you, mm-hmm. you're attracted to, and mm-hmm. the thing that is repulsive, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
And both of them are considered bad for
impediments.
You. Yeah.
Impediments.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That and it's exactly the opposite mm-hmm. of what the entire marketing culture we live in mm-hmm. professes, mm-hmm. right? If you get the stuff that makes you happy, then mm-hmm. you're happy.
Right. Right?
And so I mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure most people who've tried that route will let you know it doesn't exactly work.
Right? Or it works for a certain amount of time. Like they do studies on people who buy new cars, and like how happy you are about your new car like rapidly diminishes from the moment you get it.
Yeah.
To the point that like, you know, you might not even appreciate it. And I think that that's one of the things in our society today is we're so saturated with objects.
Yeah.
That we deeply desire and we cultivate. I mean, I know I love buying things on the internet, but I know that like the time it feels the best is the point before I buy it. And then as soon as I buy it, the good I feel around that thing like rapidly diminishes.
Yeah. And we talked a bit about that in our last chat, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. but you know, I wanted to get mm-hmm. at this notion of like the things that you're attracted to mm-hmm. and the things that you're repulsed from. Like if mm-hmm. I can keep this away, mm-hmm. then I'll be happy, right? Or if I can get rid of those things I don't like, then I'll be happy. Mm-hmm. But both of those mm-hmm. things, both of those impulses mm-hmm. imply, like they trick your mind into mm-hmm. this way of thinking that my happiness is dependent on those things outside of me.
Right.
If I could get that one, I'd be happy. Or if I could get rid of that other one, mm-hmm. I would be happy. And it mm-hmm. takes away this core truth that mm-hmm. your happiness is in you.
Right.
And if you can find that
and not get distracted,
then whatever's going on the outside, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You're just going to live with. You're just going to be dealing with. And you'll enjoy the things that you like.
Mm-hmm.
And you won't enjoy so much the things that you don't like, but you won't think your happiness is built on those things,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And you can only get to that mm-hmm. when you can take the time away from your normal mental activity, which is so full of telling stories, like, mm-hmm. like I'll be happy
like the most when I get fascinating that. Stories. Like, and we don't even see the thing that's so interesting, I think, is that we don't even notice that we're telling ourselves stories. We just believe these things. Like we just fall completely into these holes. And so one of the things that can start to shift with yoga practice, I think it did for me, was like just starting to see like, oh my God, like I really like this thing. Even just noticing like, I really like this thing. Noticing like, I do not like this thing. This thing is gross to me.
Yeah.
Like becoming conscious of that.
More aware.
Right. Yeah. That's like where you're already starting to have a shift. Yeah. Even if it seems like, because I think a lot of people, when they first start practicing, there's this immediate perception of the thing you don't like. And then you're like, oh no, there's so much of it.
Right.
But we forget that actually just the noticing of it is right. already a big step.
Yeah. One of mm-hmm. The teachers who was in a teacher talk that I gave the other day mm-hmm. said, I've been meditating very regularly, you know, for you know, a little while now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll come out of meditation and I'll feel so good. And then I'll sit down at my desk and there's some email that just like, I just lose it totally. Like, what's the deal with that? And it was so, and I had to be talking also to people who were online. So I was being,
mm-hmm.
I was repeating the questions mm-hmm. for the people online so they mm-hmm. could hear what was being said in the room. And my rephrasing of that question was, she says she meditates, why isn't she perfect? Right? Because
right.
we're just going to see more yeah. clearly and yeah. we'll have more discernment.
Yeah.
But you're still you, you know, you still mm-hmm. have your personality and your
triggers.
Mind is still going to be
mm-hmm.
doing its thing. It's mm-hmm. its karmic thing. Like, mm-hmm. you know, we were born with certain DNA mm-hmm. in certain family, in certain town, in a certain culture, and all those things impact us.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all part of the play. Those are the roles that we're all in and that we're learning within. And mm-hmm. so we're just going to do the best we can, practice, see more clearly, study, let go.
Not take it so personal.
Not take it so personally. Remain detached. Do the four keys.
Mm-hmm.
Be happy and loving for people who are happy,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Be compassionate for people who are unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
Be happy for those who are successful.
Mm-hmm.
And find a detachment from people who are harmful to us.
Yes, yes.
So with that, we can take a nice deep breath. Thank you for having this chat.
It was a pleasure.
And I look forward to our next one.
Me too. Thank you, Peter.
Namaste.
Namaste.
That's today's episode of Peter's Podcast. If you enjoy this podcast, please consider supporting it on patreon.com. This is a way for me to avoid having advertisements on the podcast, and instead you can support at any level you like. I call it being a subscriber, but you can pick the amount you subscribe for. I hope you'll check it out. It's at patreon.com. That's patreon.com/Peter's Podcast, all one word. Thanks, and look forward to talking with you again.